fourth down, the final play, unless they can stick it in the end zone. Dorsey, under pressure, throws it. Incomplete. The Buckeyes win.
Ezekiel Elliott, and he's got an opening. Elliott, off to the races. Can they catch him?
Feature the two backs as receivers, and now a downfield shot on first down for the end.
Making the Judkins again, and there is Smith running free, makes a tackle, Ohio State strikes quickly for 45 yards.
Pressure comes, Sore, knocked it out, and picks it up, Jack Sore, coming down the sidelines, Ohio State, scoop, and score, and dagger from 82 yards.
Here they come,
heavy pressure, Howard delivers, downfield, it's Smith.
2025 College Football National Champion Coach Ryan Day and the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Welcome in, Buckeye backers. We are bringing it to you live from Seattle, Washington to the cornfields of Enon, Ohio. We are the pulse of Buckeye fans across the nation with Seattle Matt and Buckeye Steve.
What is up, Buckeye backers? We are getting ready for media days. It's coming right around the corner. Seattle, how you doing, man? Thanks for coming in again. I know every day it's a rough day getting back after work and trying to get to this, man. So we're here. We're ready for some football. We're going to talk about the offensive line. We're going to talk about what we think is probably our most confident position. What do you think? What's your most confident position heading into this season? Is there a no-brainer out there, maybe, by chance?
I'd probably have to say the wide receiver group, just because You have the most elite wide receiver in college football in Jeremiah, and I think Carnell Tate is absolutely fantastic, and you're just pumping out wide receivers at such a high level that I'm always going to have the most confidence, I think, in that group. But I think it's still really early to tell. How about you?
I mean, obviously, we got to go to the wide receiver as the most confident, just because year after year after year, you go from recruiting, you go from just the standard is the standard there at wide receiver. It's wide receiver you have Jeremiah Smith, and you have five stars across the board almost. Even the guys that weren't recruited as five stars have become five stars, right?
Yeah.
But we'll save wide receiver for another day since we're so confident in it. We're going to break down the offensive line. And really, I'll throw out a fun fact. When was the last Joe Moore Award-winning offensive line at Ohio State?
Whew, that's a good question, man. 2004?
2004, the word wasn't even around in 2004. Trick question. Never won a Joe Moore Award.
That's why nothing popped in my head.
Which was weird, because when I looked it up, I was like, it's only been around since 2014, 2015. Alabama was the first winner in 2015, followed by Iowa. And then in 2017, Notre Dame, 2018, Oklahoma, 2019, obviously, LSU, 2020, Alabama, 2021, Michigan, 2022, Michigan, 2023, Washington, and last year, Army. Kind of interesting, man. I would have guessed that it had been around a lot longer than that, but it was a Notre Dame and named after a Notre Dame coach, Joe Moore, longtime Notre Dame coach. Kind of cool. So this is the year I think our offensive line has a chance in winning it. And I just want to bring up a look at these guys, because I made the graphic for the show and I kind of flipped everyone around, because you got to rotate it for who's right, who's left. So this is what we think the offensive line will be. Honestly, you start off with Carson Hensman, the center, number 75. He's been all around the offensive line. Started at center 2 years ago, then got taken away. Kicked over to guard, played awesome, phenomenal at guard last year. Then the injuries happen, goes back to center. just your typical Wisconsin guy, 6'5", 300 pounds, someone who is dependable. So I think probably have another guy in the running for the Remington by the end of the year. You know, the way he played in the playoffs, this whole offensive line played amazing in the playoffs last year. And he's one of them returning, a key cog to the offensive line, right?
Absolutely. I mean, he's essential, especially in the pull game, the trap game. So, really important piece there.
Something happens, then he can go to guard. You have Joshua Padilla, the center out of Wayne, that could be the backup there. Obviously, people are switching around this year. So, you know, they're going to have a first, they're going to have a second, and the third position. Then let's stay on the right side of the ball. We'll go to Luke Montgomery, number 51, 6'5", 308 pounds out of Findlay, Ohio. Played up like a monster last year. He's got like kind of that nastiness to him that I really like. Someone who's going to explode off the line. You know, been at Ohio State for a while now and shown what he can do. He kind of had to work his way up. He's a junior now and out of Findlay, Ohio. One thing I noticed about this, too, it was interesting. The interior of our offensive line is all Ohio. Right guard, center, left guard, and even, and Austin Saraveld also is from Lakota East. So he could be going in and around whether he's going to be tackle. It sounds like tackle now. Right tackle, number 76, 6'5", 320 pounds at a Lakota East High School. Just getting all kinds of praise. He's the one that's, you know, getting the Iron Buckeye. He's getting Buckeye of the Week. Just hitting it up in the locker room. Everyone's looking to him as a leader. So that's one of the guys on the offensive line that's just – he's a standout. Like, he had problems getting started. And I said Austin Saraveld. He's from Wisconsin. I don't know.
No, he's not. He's from Lakota East. You're right.
And was the one from Wisconsin. Sorry.
Yeah. No. You're right all along. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, right tackle, right guard, left tackle, all Ohio guys. Tegra Shibola, number 77, left tackle, 6'6", 326 pounds out of Lakota West. Man, again, a starter last year.
You got Shibola at guard or tackle. You keep saying left tackle. So I just want to clarify the first group. Shibola. He's at guard, right?
Left guard, yes.
Yeah.
Did I say tackle?
Yeah, just clarifying for the audience. So
definitely at guard. Yeah. And he has the body that he could play tackle, but I don't think he's ready for that yet. He's probably gonna end up staying at guard. I don't think that there's any chance that he's playing tackle. But if he can get a little lower, he was one last year that stood up a lot and came right up out of the blocks. He was just big enough to do it. So if they can get him with a little bit better technique, which I'm sure that they will this year, and having Tyler Bowen being there as the offensive line coach and having his two assistants, Charlie Dickey and Marcus Johnson, being there, that's one thing that's unique this year versus years in the past, which we'll talk about in the future because we got to get into these tackles. The left tackle, Ethan Oniawa, 6'6", 36 pounds now out of Katy, Texas, the Rice transfer. Is there any reservations about him at all because he's coming out of Rice, you know, not having that quality matchup that he's having, you know, if he were in the SEC, if he were transferred from the ACC, one of the Big Fours, or if he was in the Big Ten to start with?
I don't, because, you know, Rice still plays. You know, Texas periodically. I know they didn't last year, but maybe 2 years ago they probably played Texas. So you're still getting that experience. I'm going to be a lot more concerned about your FCS transfers, your D2 transfers. The speed is so much different. I don't have as much reservations about somebody coming from a mid-level FBS level school, but you know, you're going to have to be guns blazing first snap of the season.
Absolutely. So
I would, again, like to have started out with Grambling, but that's not the case this year. So,
well, you know, every year you want that cupcake. We don't have scrimmages in college football, and that's really unique to all of sports, really. You have scrimmages, you know, even at the peewee level of football. It's just college football. You don't get those scrimmages. Obviously, in the NFL, you get plenty of scrimmages, almost too many. So it's kind of, you know, straight off the bat, you got to be ready to go. And this year in particular, when Texas comes down, you have top five matchup from the start, from the first snap, like you said, you got to be ready to go. So that offensive line has got to know to gel. Sometimes it takes that offensive line a little longer to gel. And that's where I don't think from a talent standpoint at all, this is going to be a problem. It's just new coaches and a couple of new guys on the offensive line, particularly at the bookends. Maybe if you're counting Phillip Daniels, obviously you have Saraveld, he's going to be that tackle and he's a starter, but Phillip Daniels was in the running. Everyone thought, yeah, he was probably going to be there and Saraveld was going to be the guard, but Tegra Shibola, I think, is staying there and Saraveld's got that tackle spot locked up, man. I mean, Day said he's a starter right away. He's a guy that's just kind of leading that locker room as far as the offensive line is concerned.
Yeah, and I think that's good. Again, I think the versatility was something that naturally just came out, you know, in the late November last year. We saw that with all the injuries along the line. Mm-hmm. I like that they're mixing and matching and switching a lot of players. You know, I look at one end of this and I say, okay, you got three juniors and a sophomore. That's fantastic news for this 26 roster, especially hopefully you have a second-year quarterback. You're going to return 80% of your offensive line. You've got Daniels that could jump in probably at that tackle spot for Oniawa, who's, you know, hopefully going to the NFL. I think one of my concerns is when you're looking at the depth, when you're starting going second and third tier, you're seeing a lot of sophomores and freshmen, man. So let's talk a little bit about the depth that you're seeing and whether or not these sophomore freshmen are going to be able to plug and play. Somebody goes down in Texas, somebody goes down in Penn State. What are your thoughts about the depth?
Well, I mean, that's a particular concern all the time on offensive line, because that's just something that can happen. I think the recruiting at Ohio State has been better. And definitely this year, it's better than it's ever been, at least as far as I can remember back. So I trust those guys, you know. We got the twins, the Devontae and Deontay Armstrong. Yeah.
And they're red shirt.
I trust those guys coming in. Carter Lowe, I trust him coming in. Gabe Van Sickle, I think I trust him. I'm not quite sure, but I've heard good things. You know, I got to take a look more. And you're absolutely right. Depth is going to be key for this team. I don't think we have depth like we did last year. But offensive line was a concern last year to start the year. And then it ended up being a strength of the team by the time playoffs rolled around. So starting off with the team.
It was a strength because of Chip Kelly on the day. Yeah, I mean, they took what they had given the injuries, especially when McLaughlin went down, and they started doing a lot of counter, a lot of different play action. They really helped out the offensive line a lot. You know, that's something I'm going to want to really see probably in that first half of that Texas game is how much does Ryan Day trust this offensive line. If they're lining up and they're handing the ball to peoples, especially with the elite defensive line that Texas has year in and year out, you're going to see a lot of confidence. But if you're going to see a lot of counters, and as we coined it last year, the double counter, or you're seeing a lot of play action, that tells me that maybe Ryan Day doesn't have the utmost confidence in this line. So I think that first half against Texas is going to be very telling on the confidence meter of this O-line.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you, you know, test a line? You play against a good team like Texas, an SEC team, and probably a leader in the nation on defensive line. You're going to know right out of the bat if this offensive line is ready to go, if Tyler Bowen's doing his job. Everything I've seen so far about Tyler Bowen, I'm loving, man. Just the recruiting end, he's doing it. You know, seeing him in the trenches coaching. When Sam Greer came in and he started pushing him around when he committed, he comes over like all like, you know, like serious, like, hey, coach, I'm going to commit. And then Tyler Bowen just runs him into the wall, man. It's exciting to have a coach like that gets pumped up, that's, you know, ready to play ball, basically, you know.
And these college kids need that. I mean, that's the kind of coach that excels in college football. You wouldn't get away with that in the NFL. But college and high school, kids feed off that stuff. So that's great that he's coming in like that.
Getting pumped up, getting hot. I'm ready. I'm getting pumped up for football right now. The one thing that gets me pumped up And I don't know if it gets you pumped up, but man, we're switching tones right here. Like a dramatic switch.
Hold on. Before you switch tones.
You got more?
No, just one thing, and then you can switch. Watching the MLB All-Star game tonight on Fox, what do you think they did a promo of in the second inning? Ohio State, Texas. Man, already seeing the TV promos. Now, they didn't have a time, right? We all know it's going to be big noon. But they didn't put a time. But you actually saw a 30-second promo in between innings for Ohio State, Texas. So now you got TVs already starting to ramp it up. We are getting in the football season. I just had to throw that in.
I like that you said that. I like that you brought that up. So, you know, for everyone watching here in the audience or anyone that listens to us, me and Seattle Matt have these conversations in the offseason. I'm like, hey, man, we got to do a show. And he's like, man, this isn't football season yet. I'm not pumped up. I'm not ready to go. Be like, I'm always ready to go. I'm always ready to talk a little bit about football. I mean, even if you have to manufacture some stuff, I'm ready to go. And I'm getting excited now because next week I'm going to Vegas. I'll be at Big Ten Media Days, and it's just getting started, man. My blood's boiling. I'm ready for some football. It's not summer anymore. It is fall. It's time to go, boys and girls. You're not feeling it?
Nope.
You're not feeling it, man?
I will say I was pretty psyched seeing that promo, but I think it's really – I got to see that actual football being played, and I always told you – you know, being a Northeast Ohio boy, I always look at that Hall of Fame game. I know it's a junk preseason game, four stringers play on both sides, but that's the first time you get to see football on television. That's kind of my Kickstarter. That's July 21st, so 16 days away. It really takes that NFL preseason, as silly as it sounds, but just watching football on TV definitely gets those juices flowing. And I love week zero, starting before everybody else, because then you're getting that real taste of the college football before it's a lot of your big boys play. So no, I'm not there yet. I got to see football on TV, but I will say seeing a promo definitely was nice tonight.
I'm glad you brought that up, man.
Yeah.
Cause it's time for you to get into it. Get into the game, man.
No, man. I need foot to leather, man. I need foot to leather before I can get going.
Wait. Speaking of that, you were playing the game and you mentioned earlier today something about Oniyamwa. What was happening with him in the game?
Yeah, I'm definitely the college football game the last obviously 2 years now, and it's been around, has definitely got those juices flowing. But I thought something that was very odd was the fact that I'm seeing him get injured a lot in the game, and there's a lot of realistic aspects of injuries and stuff in this game. And again, I don't know if that extrapolates to the real world. I don't know if they trim that down because they're saying, okay, this kid was a transfer from Rice. We're not going to score him as high. These are all perceptions, right? The video game people put in. But I will say the ratings on Madden and the ratings on these college football games, they try to get those as close as possible. Kids take that very seriously. I'll give you a great example. The punter for Kentucky got scored a 0 on strength. The guy did a national media tour all through ESPN talking about it. And like, I'm not a zero in strength. Like, I don't know if he was joking or he was serious. I mean, the guy's actually supposed to be the SEC punter of the year. I mean, he's a good punter, but the fact they gave him a 0. So I'm telling you, these kids watch these things and they take these seriously. And playing in this game, it's like every third quarter, Oniyamwa's going down. And again, video game people, take it with a grain of salt, but you definitely notice these trends when you play these video games. So I think this is Oniyamwa saying, yeah, I am able to compete at this level. Ohio State brought him in because they knew he could compete at this level, and love to see him play 17 games uninjured.
Absolutely. You know, I don't think we're going to get through the season, obviously, if it goes to 17 games without some injuries. It's going to happen. It's just part of football. The good thing is it seems like Ohio State from last year, their experiences, they're getting a little bit more prepared for it in advance. So I like to see some stuff switch around, especially when you get into the games after Texas, when you have the Grambling States of the world where you have some time to kind of move stuff around. Why not switch them during live games, you know, to get some experience, you know, so if you want to come trot out the starters after halftime, change their positions a little bit, see what they play at their second position. You know, I think that's a great time to do it.
But
thoughts on that?
I don't know if there's a lot of opportunities with this schedule. I mean, you you know, you start with Texas. Yes, you got grandma in Ohio, but then again, you're coming to Seattle, and it's not because I'm Seattle mad. I am scared to death of that game. We're going to get into it a little bit more in September, but that's UW Super Bowl, man. And they played very well at home. That's a scary game. You got to go to Wisconsin. You got Illinois a couple weeks after. You got Penn State. I mean, there are a lot of just tough games throughout with maybe a sandwich game in between. So there's not going to be this 3-4 week stretch where you're going to be able, hey, we're going to gel. We're going to roll people by 45. I mean, even going to Wisconsin or Camp Randall, I don't care if Wisconsin is a 6-6 team. That's not a fun place to go play, especially if it's a night game. So this is one of those things I think if you're Coach Day, you're going to have to really instill that you have got to have your foot on the gas pedal week one this year. And we're not going to have a lot of luxuries in taking that off. And something you and I talked about last year, which we really want to see, if you are up 28-3 on a Minnesota or a UCLA or something like that, let's get your starters out of halftime. Let's get this second string in. Let's get that second O-line in. Let's see how they do our piece match throughout and get some of these guys some experience there. So if somebody does go down, it is that natural progression.
Mm-hmm. How many years have Luke Fickell been there now? Is this his third year?
Ooh. I don't know off the top of my head. Three sounds right.
Wisconsin?
I'm entirely sure. I don't know. I could pull it up pretty quickly for you, but I don't have it off the top of my head.
Yeah, don't worry about it. If you want to, go for it. So the other thing, we didn't really touch on it before we switched to the next subject. Tyler Bowen has two assistants, Charlie Dickey and Marcus Johnson in there. I think that's huge, having those other assistants there to help, even just with recruiting. You know, I've heard a lot of recruits when they're coming in, they're like, hey, it's nice to have two other coaches there because you can kind of get all the attention that you need and all the detail that you need to gel that offensive line maybe a little quicker and just to teach the fundamental concepts a little bit easier.
I think it certainly helps, and that helps with depth too. Again, if if Coach Bowen's with that first string, you've got other assistants, you got other people who are speaking the same language of that coach, helping out with that second and third depth, and that's really critical for development.
And it was really interesting just the fact that Ryan Day chose, hey, that's a position that we really need to focus on now. And I don't know if that came from Tyler Bowen being hired or if it was Ryan Day being like, hey, man, I know the offensive line is the heart and soul. Deep in the trenches is where you got to start. You build your football team out from there because you got to have the blocking or you got nothing. I always say you can make an average quarterback look good with a great offensive line. You can make an average running back look good with a great offensive line. And then if you have a good running back and a good quarterback with a great offensive line, man, there you go. That's where you start winning Heismans and championships.
But the offensive line this year is more important than ever with the inexperience at quarterback. So you're always going to need that line with a young quarterback at play, especially because establishing the run is the greatest benefit to a young quarterback. If you can start running the ball, now you're looking at second and five and third and threes every time he's going out there, you're putting him in a great position. But if you start getting those third and eights and third and 12s because, you know, you're not getting any rushing game or you're getting a guy blown up in the backfield, you're putting these young quarterbacks in a bad position. So this O-line is going to be even more crucial early on. Establish the run, keep it in third and manageable, and give Julian Sander Kindholds a chance.
That's a really good point. A really good point. For a young quarterback, first year starting, Kindholds or Sang would be the first year starting. Just inexperience is more what we really need to say, because Kindholds isn't necessarily young, third year in the program. But that experience level, like Will Howard had all that experience at Kansas State, didn't need to like get the experience level first, didn't need to kind of gel with an offensive line because he's done that before. He had a new offensive line, granted, but he had that experience level. And you're right, having a offensive line that's able to gel earlier in the season, it did take them a while last year because of injuries and kind of a change in offensive philosophy a little bit. But it's all all the money in the world, basically, if you can have an offensive line that's going to stand up, give them time, establish a running game, like you said, there's no telling what either of those two quarterbacks can do with the receivers that we got.
So give them time and put them in manageable down and distance situations. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be successful, but very few quarterbacks are successful when you're third or eight or more. So it's all about putting them in the best position.
It's all about having Jeremiah Smith.
That certainly helps, man. That certainly helps.
Jeremiah Smith, Max Clair. Oh, man. All right. Moving right along. Connor Stallions. This is your favorite topic. It's got to be. It's every Ohio State fan's favorite topic. He spouted
I voted against it.
Twitter. You voted against it. What do you mean, voted against it?
I voted against even talking about it, man. You overrode me.
You don't want to talk about Connor Stallions.
I don't want to hear his name.
Why?
I don't care. What's wrong with like, him? First off, I think what he did is wrong. But you are innocent until proven guilty. And I think that statement comes as a result of facts being uncovered and the information being made public and the punishment taking effect. And until any of that takes place, we're just dealing with the ineptitude of the NCAA and their investigation and wild speculation at this point. And I don't dabble in those worlds. So I really have zero interest in any aspect of this story until the facts come out. And even then, I have no confidence in the NCAA to fully execute on it.
You're frustrated by the story.
No, I care about the results. And to me, with the NCAA, when something happens, it takes them 3-4 years to get to it. And very rarely does the punishment ever fit the crime. You know, I look at USC and how they got obliterated for Reggie Bush. Ohio State got some things pretty handed down pretty harshly. You look at alternatives like Penn State, where I didn't think they were punished harsh enough for the atrocities that occurred there. So I have zero confidence that if there were electronic devices being used and he was on the sidelines and he was recording this stuff and he was doing these things, that they're going to hold Michigan to that any level of accountability. And I don't want no death penalty, right? Like, I think that's absurd, but you need to have a pretty stern, harsh penalty. And I just have no confidence that the NCAA is going to do a thorough investigation and make sure that the punishment fits the crime. So I don't care.
You know what I like about it?
What Michigan, do you like about it?
Michigan men, they hold themselves to a higher standard. All moral high ground approach. And this is the epitome of one of the worst cheating. I think it's the worst cheating scandal in all of college football ever.
Yeah. The facts got to come out. That's the problem. Facts got to come out. You don't know.
There's enough check marks for me to say it happened. I mean, those tickets were bought. We know that. And those tickets were given away. And that information was given back to Connor Stallions. Connor Stallions won a game ball, for God's sakes. Like, who is just some, you know, assistant, just a general staff member, gets a game ball? Have you ever heard of anything like that? And it's not a meaningless game. It was a Big Ten game against Iowa. He got a game ball. So Harbaugh gave that game ball.
Again, everybody knows that it's under your ruling, right? So if anything bad happened, it falls on Harbaugh. These coaches are really smart about plausible deniability. I wouldn't put it passive that somebody said, hey, coach, Connor did amazing scouting for this game. Get him a game ball. And Harbaugh hands him a game ball. I wouldn't be surprised by that. I'm not sitting here saying
Harbaugh's there's not anyone on that team that didn't deserve it from their play. Yeah. I call bullshit.
But you do want to promote the scouting department, right? If your scouting department does it ethically and legally and does a heck of a job and your team's fully prepared because of the scouting, you're giving that tip of the cap to the scouting department. So I don't think Harbaugh knew, honestly. I don't think he did. One, people are really smart about plausible deniability. And two, he doesn't strike me as a type that probably pays attention to a lot of that stuff. Do I think people underneath him knew? Yeah, probably. But I don't think Harbaugh knew.
Just some of these takes by Connor just blow my mind. if you don't want teams to steal your signs, then don't signal. All right, first of all, you didn't have helmet comms. Connor Stallions, you're the reason why there's helmet comms in college football now. And there's no advantage unless you're trying to prevent a sub or it's a two-minute offense. Of course there's an advantage. You want to get out there quick, call the plays quick, and make the defense fatigued. You want them to be gasping for air. And, yes, you don't want them to sub. There's a direct schematic advantage, so it makes no sense that he's even saying that. Notice how teams still signal. It's because they're going up-tempo. Of course, they want you to go up-tempo. And then he was talking about with helmet comms. They're still doing it. Yeah, of course. The only reason they're helmet comming is because of you, man. You were stealing signals. And you did it in a way that was illegal and no one else was doing it. Of course, the whole comment with Michigan fans is everyone did it. Everyone was stealing signals. It was how you stole the signals. Don't forget about that. How you obtained the signals is the key here. Everyone else wasn't doing that. Everyone else wasn't buying tickets to games for friends or other members of the military to go take their cell phone out and just video the signal callers. Yeah, of course there's people at a game with their cell phones videoing the actual play to post it on Facebook, on Instagram, on other socials, right? Of course, but they're not videoing the guy doing his hand signals, you know? They're not doing that.
But that's what I'm saying. This all has to come out. Again,
yes.
This is all speculation on the internet. There is no video of Connor Stallions that we're aware of publicly filming these people. So this is where, have fun on the internet, you know, and speculate all you want. I see it as an utter waste of time. If the NCAA comes out and says, we have stadium footage of Connor Stallions videotaping these, we have them red-handed, and this is the penalty as a result of it, great. It's a great story. Mm-hmm. I'll read all about it. But until that happens, we're just dealing in the world of speculation.
Listen to this. All right. Yeah, still a little bit speculation, but pause. Doug Shepherd, yes, we're back, man. Thank you. Thanks for coming. I love having you here, man. Keep it coming. You're keeping our locker room. We got to start our locker room back up. So got the comments from the locker room coming again for this year. All right. So he says there were seven games, Connor Stallions says, in my time at Michigan where I knew almost every signal the whole game. And he goes on to list them. We only lost three of those games because we didn't tackle well and Georgia was historically good. All right. One of those was TCU, who knew you knew the signals and made dummy signals and beat you because, not because of turnovers, not because of not tackling well, not because of ball security, not because of blocking, not because of run fits or coverage tools. It's because they were able to trick you. They had dummy plays, which I think some of these other teams should have done too. The 2002 Michigan State, 2002 Penn State, the 2002 Ohio State should have known by then.
Yeah. And I mean, this is where that fine line comes into play about knowing another team's signals and how you acquired that knowledge. If you're able to see things on the film that they provide to you in television coverage and things like that, and you decipher it, I don't know. It's a really thin line. Take this great example of Major League Baseball, right? People may
damn
not know.
You, Houston Astros.
No, the Houston Astros.
Damn you.
Everything around the Houston Astros and what they did in the World Series run about having electronic devices and banging trash cans and everything, it flies in the face of baseball. But I'll also tell you at the same point, guys standing on second base watching a catcher put fingers down used to steal signs left and right. So there was a part or an aspect of stealing signs in baseball. Everyone says perfectly legal. The Houston Astros took it too far when they utilized electronic devices and they utilized trash cans. This is the same thing here, where him acknowledging, hey, I knew what signs they had, I've studied this, there's a certain point where that's fine. It's did he utilize electronic devices and other methods in order to obtain those signs to use them? So it's a really fine line you're dealing with here, and I have no confidence the NCAA is going to prove that.
I don't, the NCAA doesn't have to prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt. It's not the court of law.
Yeah.
They're going to, they already know enough evidence now. And everything else that's been going on, everything else, it's an easy lack of institutional control.
Then why haven't they acted?
Because they take forever to act. Always take forever to act.
Why?
Because they got to study, and seal it up tight. I don't know. It's basically run like a government organization, you know?
No, government organizations are more efficient than the NCAA.
It just takes forever. There's a lot of red tape. I don't know, and they don't meet enough. I have no idea why they don't act. Because they have all those standard protocols that they have to meet, too. Like, now you have a 90-day window to file your appeal. I mean, it's constant. Every time there's a ruling, there's an appeal. Every time there's another ruling, there's another appeal.
That's a judicial process. You have to have appeal. Mm-hmm. You just have to.
I agree with that. It's just there's too many.
There are, but again, this is where you can just sit here. We could do a weekly show around this for the next 2 years and accomplish absolutely nothing. That's where I say with all these NCAA events investigations, one area they really have to tighten up is pay better investigators, get to the bottom of things, and you need to turn around investigations within a year. It just needs to be within a year. It cannot drag on. And if it drags on, then you got to say, hey, listen, you got to come with a ruling or there's a statute of limitations here. So the NCAA is one of the major problems in all of this. And at the end of the day, I think what you have to prove is the utilization of electronic devices or being on the sidelines of games he should not have been on in order to pin them down. And I think if they had that evidence, they would have moved forward with it.
That's the other thing we need to talk about. I mean, he was on the sidelines at Central Michigan. I mean, that's obvious. First of all, you had the picture of him. Second of all, you know.
We've seen that picture. That is true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, have you seen that ever in the history of football that a coach from another team? I mean.
Not to my knowledge, no.
Why would you do that? If you weren't advanced scouting. If you weren't trying to give the other team some signals.
You were. I mean, that's probably what you were doing.
And that is just beyond comprehension.
But that's where, again, prove it. And that's the whole point of all of this is, listen, I would love nothing more than harsh, draconian penalties applied to Michigan. We would all just revel and smile in it.
I just like them talking shit. Getting shit talked to them every single day. Like the hashtag, or I mean the stars, you know, behind their national title doesn't really mean anything, right?
I mean, it does. I mean, you and I have both seen Michigan fans put asterisks next to our championship this year.
Well, yeah, they say the Mickey Mouse, but who cares? We went through a college football playoff. It was actually
no team has ever accomplished what this Ohio State team did. Nobody has ever had to win four straight top 10 games to win.
They probably won.
Well, they will subsequent year. Every
most
year
of these teams are most of these teams. It's going to have to be because they're going to have the.
Well, three or
maybe
four.
Maybe a bye unless they go when they go to 16.
It's either going to be three or four in all probability. You're going to play at least three top 12 teams. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's where, again, all the subsequent years, you're going to see this in a lot of regards, but nobody did what they did. And you still have Michigan people put asterisks on. So this is simply
that's
the internet. That's all it
that
is.
And wars on the internet are right. I like some of them, and particularly the asterisks. I keep saying hashtags for some reason. Asterisks. That cracks me up that they try to do it back because it's just like, oh, you did it to us, so we're going to do it to you. And it makes zero sense.
I don't get it, man. That's where.
You hate the internet wars. Hey, we're going to keep talking ourselves down a hole because Seattle Matt hates this conversation. absolutely despises it. He's like, he just wants to get it to an end. He's like a Michigan fan. He wants to get it to an end. He wants to get it over with and see what happens. Me, I want to draw out for 3 more years and talk about it every day and make Michigan fans miserable because they never know when it's going to come to an end. All right? We could talk about it for 3 more years. I'd be perfectly happy and wait until we get the punishment then. That'd be fine by me. So it's coming soon. Next time, we're gonna keep going through. Seattle Matt's got to get out of here, I think. He's still on mute. So adios, brother. You can take off if you want to. I'm going to close up shop here real quick. Make sure you subscribe. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Share it with a friend. Subscribe to us on Facebook, on Instagram, on X. I guess we'll call it X now. It's ready for X now. No more Twitter. Hey, just follow us on any of those. Share it. Do us a favor. It doesn't cost you anything to subscribe on YouTube. Make some comments. Doug Shepherd, we love you. Buckeye Backers are out. We'll cover another group, I guess. I think we're probably going to do the defensive line position group because we like to stay in the trenches and work our way out. And that's what I think our plan is. Also, Media Days next week. Be there in Vegas. Adios. Take care. Buckeye Backers are out. God bless. See you next time. Peace.